Stay tuned, my dad and the generations is next.
The next generation is at stake. Ladies and gentlemen, my name's Kevin Swanson, fighting for faith, family, and freedom. Will they survive in our country? It's not looking good at this point in time, but we believe that if we can lay down a vision for the next generation, it will make a significant difference. And that's why this program on this station, thank you for joining us. Dave Buhner, our producer in studio with us today. And Dave, last summer, I was doing some teen leadership work at a camp in New Mexico, and some of the most outstanding teens in America were at this camp. One mother took me aside. She said, and she had a great son, terrific son. She said, you know what? She says, video games is one of the worst things that's ever happened to our family. It's really undermining the relationship that we have with our son, and it's not doing him any good to really prepare him for life. She said, why don't you do something on the radio? I've never heard anything on the radio on games. So that's why we're doing this program. We had Al McConey on the program a little while back, and Al McConey works with teens in the area of video games. And Al told us that every mass murderer in the past 5 years under the age of 21 was deeply involved with playing first-person shooter games, including the recent DC sniper. See, I didn't know that. But it just shows you that, and I think this is where parents have a hard time. What their children play in terms of the games makes a difference in terms of how they think and how they live.
Not just video games, but any game.
Any kind of game. And, of course, games are probably more pervasive today than they were back 120 years ago when Almanza Wilder was plowing fields next to his dad. Is that a no-brainer or what? They didn't even have games, or very few games to speak of. They had some sports, they had some outdoor games, very little in terms of parlor games. And today we are just game-heavy. In fact, somebody has written a book called Entertaining Ourselves to Death. Can't remember the author. But isn't that pretty much what is happening? We are entertaining ourselves to death. The problem is extensive. It's not just what they play, it's how much they play as well, isn't it? There are some addictive qualities in terms of these games.
I've noticed it even in my own homeschool that my children sometimes will be a little slothful in their schoolwork so that they get playtime. I've seen that the quest for leisure and entertainment is consuming a society.
Dave, take your average 16, 17-year-old that you meet at the mall, all right? Just your average 16-year-old boy that you meet at the mall. His eyes are glazed. He has a hard time looking at you when you speak to him. He has a hard time speaking in something more than one-syllable words. He has a hard time focusing. He doesn't have much vision in life. Vision? What am I going to do with my life? I'm thinking about becoming really good at Xbox. There is no vision. There's no direction. And much of the problem, Dave, is probably not what happens in the school. It's what happens in the home when he gets home and he plays games and watches television for 4, 5, 6, 7 hours at a time.
And the games that he plays typically don't reinforce a positive value. In other words, his mind isn't thinking about things that are good or constructive. He's not probably playing the games like The Sims, where you build a city and you take dominion over an enterprise.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Bible tells fathers to bring your children up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Now, God holds us fathers responsible for the raising of each of our precious children. We are accountable to God Himself. If there's a problem in the raising children department of your home, the president of the universe will call somebody to the front office, and that's not mom. That's not the teacher. That's not the Sunday school teacher, and it's not the pastor. That's me. That's you, Dave. That's the fathers. We are accountable before the living God for how we raise our children. And here's the question for you dads, moms. How do games fit into that vision? Games. What are we teaching our children in the games they play? That's the topic today on Generations. My name is Kevin Swanson with Dave Buhner. Be back in a moment. An intensely relevant program today on Generations, the question of games and toys for our children. They spend hours and hours playing, but what kind of message are we communicating to our children? This is critical. We're not telling you today what games and toys to choose, but parents, you're responsible to make sure they are raised with a proper training. The message they receive is the right message. You know, it's not just computer games either, Dave. We've mentioned computer games, but some games include megalomania. Now, I'm not saying Risk is a bad game, but doesn't Risk appeal sometimes to the megalomania that lurks within many of us?
Let's see. The object of the game is to take over the world.
The world, yeah. So I'm thinking maybe there's a little megalomania in this game. Doesn't mean that every child who plays the game gets that message, right? So we're not saying the game itself is inherently bad, but we are saying that there is a tendency that might move in that direction. And that game, Risk, was a tough game for me when I was a boy. I remember I had a hard time handling that game. My parents didn't let me play it very much.
I'd say Monopoly also falls in that category, where the idea is to have a monopoly.
Feed the greed games. That's what I like to call them. Feed the greed games. How many of those are out there?
You know, Kevin, it isn't just Risk or any other game necessarily. My children can have the same megalomania tendency playing with Play-Doh.
Yeah.
I want all the Play-Doh.
That's my Play-Doh. It's all mine. That's right. Obviously, children can use any game to their own detriment. And, of course, that's what parenting is all about, isn't it, Dave?
Parenting is helping them overcome their sin, yes, and directing them in righteous ways, their arrows that are going to be focused in a direction. Now, it's really hard to shoot an arrow straight if the arrow is bent.
Right, right. And we've been talking a little bit about boys and the games that boys enjoy, but what about girls, Dave? You got any ideas on what kind of toys are harmful or helpful for little girls?
Well, as it turns out, I have a couple of little girls, and I married a girl, so I have a little bit of experience there. I've noticed over the years that the traditional toy that girls play with is a doll.
Yes.
Has changed dramatically. It's gone from baby dolls that you would care and nurture and you would develop your maternal instincts. And now we're to Barbie doll. And the Barbie, think about it, she doesn't have a husband.
Right.
She doesn't have children. Mm-hmm. The object of Barbie is to get my Corvette, my beach house, and be my own selfish pig.
And children are in the way. Now, has that particular worldview infiltrated America over the last 30 years? I'm my own selfish pig, let's cut the birth rate, children aren't worth anything. That worldview affected us at all.
Not only has it affected us, but it's pretty well documented that Barbie's bodily shape was disproportionate to the normal population. If you catch my drift here.
Okay, right.
It turns out that on both coasts that having breast augmentation surgery is all the trend for girls around 16 to 17 years of age. They want to be Barbie.
And besides that, Barbie is anorexic. Right? I mean, there's no getting around it. That Barbie is anorexic. And what's the popular shape for women today? Basically anorexia. Right? You see it everywhere. It's being enforced on gals everywhere. And it's a crying shame.
And so our point here is because this is the image that they're putting into their mind, they think this is normative. That is what they aspire to. So if your child is playing Risk all the time or some game where they're taking over the world, what do you think they're going to aspire to? Well, they're going to think of themselves as little Napoleons. If it's Barbie dolls, whatever it is, whatever the mind meditates on is the direction that it's going to go. So we're not saying don't ever play Risk. That's not our message. Our message is, think about those things which are going to pull us in righteous ways. Put positive games, positive entertainment. Children need a time to imagine and to play. I let my boys play with sticks all the time. Of course, everything is a sword. Mm-hmm. Everything is
right.
A sword.
Right.
And they take turns who's Apollyon and who's Pilgrim. As they sword fight, we want them to understand that they're fighting for righteous causes and righteousness. My daughters, I want them to play with dolls. I do want them to play with dolls, but I want them to play with dolls in ways that will encourage them to be nurturers, to be a wife and a mother in some point in their life.
All right, Dave, I want to introduce one more temptation that comes in games, and this is the power and control godlike quality that some children seek after in games. It starts really in the Garden of Eden. Let's bring this out. When Eve approached the tree, remember, God says, don't eat of that tree. Very simple. God said, don't eat of that tree, period. Eve approached the tree, and the Word of God said that Eve saw that the tree was desired to make one wise, and it looked good, it looked pleasant to her eyes. All right? The point here being that Eve sinned at the point where she did not make the decision based upon what God said was good and right. But she made the decision at the point, and she sinned at the point when she decided on the basis of her own criteria as to what would be good and right. In other words, Eve lifted herself up above God's standard of what is good and evil. And she established her own standard. Now let's apply it to games. I was taking a peek at a card game. Now, this is a fantasy card game that is popular today. And it turns out that this particular game encouraged a child to think that the issue was not a matter of good and evil, but a matter of power and control and winning the game. That is, the children, see, were dealt good cards and evil cards. And the directions in this card game, here is, quote, you use your forces of evil and corruption cards for your own good to hinder the good of the other player. So now, you see, the issue is, you can use evil. You can use evil as long as it accomplishes power and control, as long as it accomplishes the winning of the game for you. So, you see, the message is almost identical to the message that the serpent gave Eve in the garden. That is, you can be the person that uses good and evil, that disobeys God if necessary, to accomplish that which you need to be, and that is a God who discerns what is good and evil yourself.
If the game were, say, bocce ball or shuffleboard, where part of the game is to knock other players' piece farther away, we're not calling that evil. We're not really objecting to a game like that, are we?
No, not at all. And the problem here is when you use evil for your good. You follow me here? You use evil for your good, and that's what's being trained in some of these games. This is the way children are thinking. I can use my evil card, my demonic card, to accomplish something good for me. And that is, and if that's the message that's being conveyed, that's a really bad message. Now, of course, you can engage in a game in which you have offensive cards and defensive cards, and that's a different issue. Now you're training your children in warfare. But when you train your child to think, I can be above good and evil, as long as it helps me to win, as long as it encourages me to have power and control, and this is, of course, what's true in much of the witchcraft types of games, you can, as long as you can use the demon forces for your own good, then you're in control and you've got power. Of course, the goodness of whatever you accomplish is something that you define yourself. And thereby you become the God that the devil said you would be.
God says witchcraft is wrong. We're not going to take dominion over the witchcraft.
Yeah, because you're just you're appealing to evil and to accomplish whatever you want to accomplish. And of course, this is the worldview today. The worldview today says get whatever you want for yourself, and you can break any law to accomplish that.
Well, let's go back to Barbie for a moment. I've noticed it in most of the recent displays, you know, they have the Barbies on the shelf at the box stores, that the more popular ones are Barbie dressed in ways that are less than modest. Mm-hmm. Now, if she's using evil in order to have power, you understand what I'm saying here?
Yeah.
That people always use evil for their own power, and God calls that wicked.
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, the subject is the use of games. They are powerful. They shape your children's minds and lives. The way our children will live 30, 40 years from now will be a factor of how, will be a derivative of how they were taught in these games. Here are a couple ideas in terms of choosing quality games for our children. I'm just going to throw these things out, Dave, and you can comment on them as you see fit. Train your children in a proper concept of warfare, because you know what? Games and sports tend to have a competitive element to them. They tend to prepare your children for warfare. And, of course, as you well know, warfare is not a bad idea. We are constantly battling evil. That's what the Christian life is all about. So, of course, train your children in proper games and sports to be mighty warriors of God. That's a great concept, isn't it?
Yeah, and competition's not evil either. Just because there's a first place and a second place or a winner and everyone else is losers doesn't make that game evil. We shouldn't look down on competition.
But we should more compete with ourselves than with the other person. In other words, we should strive for I'm better than you attitude. And that sometimes happens in competition. So be careful in competition that that doesn't happen. They should be, yes, competing with others, but there should be more of a competition with myself. In other words, use the competition of others to strengthen yourself, to give yourself something to work towards, to improve yourself. The ultimate goal is to make yourself stronger than you were yesterday, right? So compete with yourself more than you compete with others, and thereby prefer others over yourself.
Yeah, let's use an example so it's a little clearer. Suppose you have a son who loves to play tennis. Now, he plays tennis against the wall all the time. He doesn't know how good he is. He goes to a tournament. Now he plays against other people. He competes against other people. Now, in that tennis tournament, he maybe comes in second. Okay, now he has a gauge. He has a standard of where he is. He wants to be better. He wants to be first. Now he wins that tournament. He's first. Does he say, I'm better than all those? No, he points to the next bigger tournament and says, I can be even better.
He says, thank God I'm better than I was yesterday. That's the proper attitude. And finally, I think the games that our children play should cultivate love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith. And it shouldn't tear those things down, right? That should be obvious. If they're playing those games, Dave, they need to be loving others more. Our games should build relationships rather than tear them down. And I think sometimes games can tear down relationships. Sometimes video games can prevent a child from interacting well with his parents. Have you noticed that?
A game should foster relationships,
sure,
as opposed to disrupting them. So if a game becomes a surrogate for the relationship, it needs to be stopped. On the other hand, some games, like war games, like the boys' sword fighting, I want them to do that in the context of protecting, of defending their homeland, their children, their church. That they have this context of why they're fighting. They're not fighting to take power over someone. So how they play and what they're thinking as they do it is just as important as the actual actions they're taking.
Ladies and gentlemen, a relevant program that affects, well, probably roughly 80 million children across America today. We are talking about games, how to train our children in the proper use of games that they will become mighty men of God and beautiful women of God in the future. My name is Kevin Swanson with Dave Buhner in studio. We'll be back in a moment with more on Generations. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Generations. My name's Kevin Swanson with Dave Buhner in studio. And, folks, it's just getting hard to be satirical anymore. You know, you just can't be satirical when you read the news and you see what's happening in the world, and it is as bad as satire 3 years ago. Grand Theft Auto, a game that lots and lots of people play. You know, you can be a pimp on this program and you hire prostitutes out.
And steal cars.
And steal cars, yeah. Grand Theft Auto. And there are millions of children. My guess is there are even children in Christian homes. Dave, it's incredible.
Yeah.
What's next?
What's next? I think Mattel will start marketing Slut Barbie. Prostitute Barbie.
Prostitute Barbie. Mm-hmm.
She may come in executive clothes. Mm-hmm. My guess is also that Porn Star Barbie is right around the corner.
Folks, it's the world you live in. It's the world you live in. And we're not going to be discerning parents. We're not going to be discerning parents when it comes to video games, when it comes to dolls and card games. Parents are just going to let it go. And they do. And they do.
And society complains about the Tonka trucks and the toy guns.
Ironic, isn't it? Ladies and gentlemen, be discerning. That's the message today. Be discerning. May I invite you down for a little vision. June 9th, 10th, and 11th is the 21st Colorado Home Educators Conference here in Denver, and we encourage you to join the 5,000 parents coming down to this conference. The people perish for lack of vision. Parents, families are perishing for lack of vision across Colorado.
And it's conferences like this that renew the vision. We try to do it on this program day in and day out, but there's nothing like a conference. Come down to the conference on June 9th, 10th, and 11th. You can register by calling 877-842-CHECK. That's 877-842-CHECK. Or it's check.org on the web, CHEC.org on the web. You can interact with this program by emailing me, kevin@check.org. That's kevin@check.org. And you can hear this program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. Please join us again next time as we lay down the vision for the next generation.